coming up on Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway, we speak with Mark Kudisch, who has a show coming up called The Holiday Guys in and around the New York area. We also talk about the Assassins One Night Only concert at Studio 54, which is a fundraiser for Roundabout Theater Company. We also talk about Mystery of Edwin Drood and Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike, as well as a bunch of other news in and around Broadway. Please stay tuned.
See that day of glory. See the day when men of goodwill live in peace again. Peace on earth. Can it be?
Hello and welcome to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway for Sunday, December 1st, 2012. My name is James Marino, and on the broadcast this morning, we have Aileen McKenna and Michael Portantier. Aileen is a writer who you could read at The Craptacular. She also writes for Backstage.com. Good morning, Aileen.
Good morning.
Hello. Also, thank you for joining us again.
No problem.
Also with us is Michael Portantier. Michael is a writer and a photographer. You can see his writing and his photography at BroadwayStars.com. You can see his photography at FileSpotPhoto.com. Michael also writes for outlets such as the Sondheim Review. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
So, this morning we have a special guest with us. We're going to speak with Mark Kudisch. Mark, a native of Hackensack, New Jersey, is best known as a Broadway performer, and we have seen him in many shows from Joseph and Beast to Pimpernel and High Society, Wild Party, Bells Are Ringin', Millie, Assassins, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, which I had forgotten that you were in.
A highlight.
The Apple Tree and 9 to 5. So good morning, Mark. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thank you so
much
for being up on a Sunday morning and joining us. So tell us, you are keeping busy right now with your partners in crime doing the Holiday Guys show. What was they called? A Hanumas?
Yeah, well, Jeff Denman, another great performer, and I, who've been friends for a while, you know, and we've actually worked together in a lot of concert stuff over at Town Hall, sort of came up with this idea. Originally, I was literally like just driving in my car, listening to holiday CDs, and because I'm Jewish, I love Christmas as much as I do, which I know doesn't make sense to a lot of people, but if you're Jewish, you understand what I mean. And I just literally, you know, reached out to Jeff while I was driving up to our house upstate, my wife's house and I upstate, and I said, you know, dude, we've got to do like a Christmas show, just a cool Christmas show that feels the way I feel when I'm just like driving on the road at night listening to my Christmas CDs. And, you know, Jeff's been in White Christmas and worked really hard on that, and is interesting because I think his perspective of the holiday season was a little different than mine, in that he, you know, been in a big show that was meant for the holidays, and of course, he loves Christmas, and he loves that show, and he loved that film, and, you know, but it's interesting how all of us can get kind of lost in, you know, the craziness of the holiday season, and get lost in the detail orientation of all the things that we have to get done. And so he was actually a little like, you know, oh, Christmas, I'm a little worn out on, you know, the holiday season. I'm like, no, it'll be fun, it'll be fun. And so we were going to do it at Town Hall. I'm going to cut this short. Basically, we ran into so much red tape along the way to do something that we thought was so simple and was basically coming from the heart. And all of the external crap we ran into just led us to go, we're doing this on our own. We're not going to involve anyone else because we have something we want to say, and other people's limited vision of what it could be is getting in the way. Hence, the Holiday Guys, which is the antithesis of any other holiday show that you're going to see this or any other season. These two guys hanging out around a fake fireplace with a flat screen television in the middle running the Yule log. And we're just talking directly to, with the audience, the whole point of the show. And we call it a show, but like, I wouldn't even call it a theatrical event. We like to call it a variety entertainment, you know? Sort of like a throwback to Carol Burnett's show or the Smothers Brothers or Laugh In, those things that, you know, were fun, that were direct to the audience. They let you in on every joke. There was a little edge to it. You know, they were a little naughty, more naughty than nice. But you always felt like they were in your living room. And that's the feeling that we wanted to get back to, because we just, it's so easy to get lost. And dude, especially this year with Sandy, because we're in Monmouth, New Jersey with the show right now. And we were just talking about, well, James, how you got hit out on Long Island, how we got hit on the lower end of Manhattan. North, you know, Jersey Shore, walloped. We're out there now, and, you know, we took a tour a couple days ago of the shoreline out there. Devastated, these gorgeous old homes. I mean, ripped apart. The woman that runs the theater that we're at right now, a massive oak tree came crashing through her ceiling. She was in the hospital, and she showed us pictures of this thing. So now she's got, like, tarps on her ceiling for, well, until the spring, because they can't do the kind of work that they need to do in the wintertime. She's got to live that way. And, like, so it brought double meaning to our show, and it really, again, brought us back to our original idea of getting back to basic, simple things, talking to people, not at them.
I saw it at Mark, I saw it at the Gotham Comedy Club. I forget, was that the first time? Was that the first time?
The first time we did it, yeah.
Yeah.
And the show has a similar shape, but there's new material to it and, you know, a real clean flow to it. So you got a sense of what it is. But if there was something that we learned along the way, like we went to Gotham because we knew that what we were doing wasn't necessarily a theater piece. It wasn't a cabaret piece. Gotham offered their space, and their space was beautiful, but we learned quickly that even that was not the right environment for what we're doing. So now we're going to be at the York Theater, which is the right environment for what we're doing.
So, Mark, I sort of remember you and Jeffrey doing this for a number of years. When did you actually start with it? Did you mention what year it was?
Oh, God, I want to say 2008.
That sounds right.
That's the germination of the idea. And then as we were working on the idea that with Town Hall, and then they were like, well, we're going to need to do this, we need to do that. And we're like, no. That's the whole thing we're trying to stay away from. Just trust. Let's just trust. Not, they had a hard time with it. You know, and then we were working with another producer friend, and he was like, well, we're going to need to do this. We're going to need to do this. No. That's getting away from the point. Let's just trust that. And that's what Jeff and I just were like, dude, we have to take this on ourselves, you know, and it's our mission. I'm not kidding. I know it sounds so silly, but truly the mission of it is to remind ourselves, not just an audience, but each other, all of us, what the holidays should truly be about, you know, which is also not to take ourselves too seriously, which we don't, you know, not to treat anything preciously, which we don't. But by being who we are, with all of our flaws, with all of our foibles, with all of our stupidity, and James, you've seen it, you know, some of this stuff is really, really stupid. We are doing stuff most people would never go beyond their own living room with. We're not, but we're just inviting everyone to our living room, you know?
Well, it really had that atmosphere. I mean, I felt it had that atmosphere at the Gotham, and it was so wonderful the way you just really move from the humor to the... I don't want to say sentiment because that creates the wrong image, but you know, there are honest, you know, there are certainly moments where you,
all honest.
Yeah.
But that's just it. I mean, it's such an interesting thing when you try to express to somebody what you're doing. And again, it's even like, I know this sounds kind of even silly, but like even going to some of the unions, cause you know, we're in the York Theater now, which is, a unionized house, and it's great and we love it. But even trying to describe to people what we're doing, you know, even going to, you know, like the music unions, because getting rights to this beautiful music, but a lot of that stuff we sing at Christmas time that we think is public domain actually isn't.
That's interesting.
You know, it's just that it's become a staple so quickly that we don't even remember, you know, like even something as simple as the image of Santa Claus. You know, that was something that the image we have today of Santa Claus was created by Coca-Cola. In like the 30s mm-hmm. and 40s, you know, before that, Santa Claus was a whole other thing. And we forget, you know, so point being that everyone's like, so what are you doing? So what is this thing? And it's that thing of, like you saying, you know, we jump from the stupid into the, for lack of a, let's just say to the sincere. Let's go to that. But it's always sort of sincere, even in its stupidity. And that's really the point of the show. We ain't acting. There's no acting. We're just having a really good time and enjoying each other and enjoying all aspects of the holiday, you know, Hanukkah and Judaism and what it means to any one of us. You know, I grew up being a Jew, and I love Christmas, love it dearly.
Do you still do that song, Mark? Do you still do that?
I still do that song. People are going to have to come and see what that song is. But we do other music that we didn't do before because, you know, you fine-tune things as you go along. And the great thing about the show is because, you know, we're doing it out right now in Monmouth. And, you know, the audience ultimately becomes the show. In ways that, yet again, you guys have seen, we still, you know, we have, you know, involvement with the audiences. We give gifts to the audiences. We never know how the audience is really going to be on any given night. So how they respond is how we respond in turn. You know, so there's a lot of improvisation that happens. There has to be. That's the point. And it's just fun. And, you know, it doesn't matter where we've played it. We've played it in Buffalo. We've played some of this in Los Angeles. We've played it in New York. The humor holds for everybody of any sort of belief system, because at the end of the day, our point is there's just truly one belief system, you know, in each other,
Mark,
regardless of the personal beliefs you carry.
Mark, do you ever think about turning this into like an HBO special?
Well, sure. I mean, we definitely thought about those things. We are continuing to think about those things. But, you know, it's a process when you do stuff like this.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, a part of what we want to do this year, we weren't even going to come to New York. We were going to be out of town, and we were going to work on the show, and we were going to, again, see how different audiences in different cities really sort of responded to it. And then we were going to, you know, bring it in New York next year. The opportunity came, so we thought, you know what, half and half, half out, half in, and that's what we're doing. And then the year, now again, we are the holiday guys, and we do not discriminate against any holiday. We are for all holidays. If they're legitimate holidays, we're for them, and that's our job, and that's our mission. So, you know, there is Halloween, and we're writing a show. There is Thanksgiving, and we're really writing a show, because there's no music for Thanksgiving out there. And Valentine's Day, we've got a show. And we'll be getting work on, a Passover Easter show. That one is going to be very interesting. Because all of them are really interesting, and the reason that they came about. So, yeah, you know, this is something that we, you know, a Showtime or an HBO, that could be fun as well. But right now, we feel like we've got a hold of Hanukkah and Christmas, you know.
Now you've recorded this now. Is that
we have an album, we absolutely do.
That's great.
And the best part of it is again, it's always a discovery, you know. You never know. You can't ever assume with audiences. The thing that drives me crazy about the theater nowadays is that people assume what an audience will like or what they won't like. So all of the choices they make are based on fear, and they've gotten so far away from, think about it, guys. They've gotten so far away from that piece or that story that really like jazzed them and want to do it to begin with, because they want to make sure everybody likes it. And I think that's the kiss of death, personally. I think you stick to what you're up to.
Yeah.
And if your passion shows through, other people's passion will follow.
That's incredibly true, I think. Who would have thought that, you know, I mean, think about the Book of Mormon.
Yeah,
you know,
I know. And I read that script and thought, I don't think so.
Right, exactly.
You know, I love those guys, but I was like, I don't think it's going to work in this situation. And I was massively wrong. And the last time I felt about a show that way was Urinetown. Same thing, you know? And I think I have pretty good taste, but, you know, sometimes you can really miss it. Even the smartest people can miss the idea. And that's it. Fine. It wasn't meant for me to understand or see how those shows were going to live. It was meant for other people to show us and go, oh, wow. That really is great. But, you know, if you don't follow that passion, you're never going to find that out. Walter Bobby said to me something, and I really appreciate it. It's one of the coolest things anyone's ever really said to me. we were working on something, and he said, I need you to just commit to this 100%, because if we commit 100% to this, we will almost know immediately 100% if it works or doesn't. And it's one of the best things anyone ever said when I was in a work environment, because I was like, you got it, 100%. Because we don't have to get in our heads about what will or won't work. If you commit, you'll find out very quickly, and then you can move on. Mm. You can either go, this is great, or you can say, okay, it doesn't work, move on. And there's no ego involved. Not when we're all in it together, committing. And that's to some degree, I think, what we've lost in the business right now. Because the business has become a bigger part than the passion and the commitment and the idea and the conversation, which is why Jeff and I are doing this, because I always say it's a conversation with an audience. And it's a real conversation with the audience. By the time you guys leave the show, I think you forget you're at a show. I do believe you forget you're in a theater. That's our hope anyway, you know? And like when people listen to the album, or not listen to the album, but they see the show and then they get the album. We've had people, so many people come up and say, so what does this sound like? And we're like, what do you mean? Well, what kind of music's on the album? And we're like, the music you just saw. Really? Is it anything like the show? And I remember I said to a woman, why wouldn't you think? And she's like, I don't know. You guys seem to be making it up there. I didn't know what was on this. And it sort of dawned on us. People really didn't get that this was thought out.
Scripted, yeah.
Like, they really sort of were like, because they had no they didn't know what to expect while they were watching the show, they sort of had no expectation of what the hell was going to be on the CD, which personally is awesome. That is exactly the kind of, because, you know, you leave going, well, that's not really a show. It's not a theater piece, because it's not structured like a theater piece. And people, you know, they had no idea where we were going half the time. And we do. Of course we do. But the joy of it is that once you have that, then you can just let it go, you know?
Well, Mark, we have a worldwide audience, and you are going to only be playing a handful of places. So I wanted to let people know that you can go to the Holiday Guys, theholidayguys.net, and you can get the CD there. You can also see their schedule for where they're going to be. You're finishing up at Monmouth University tonight, but you also play the musical fair in Buffalo from December 6th to the 9th.
In Buffalo.
You're December
6th to the 9th.
December 11th to the 16th is going to be at the Signature in Arlington, Virginia, in the Washington, D.C. area. And then you're coming into New York for December 18th to the 31st. You're right, New Year's Eve, you're going to be playing at the York in New York City. So you guys have.
So if you want to avoid Midtown, there's a day but you want to be out and have a good time in the show, we're the place, baby.
I tell you, you know, December 26th, that's a great night to see theater. You know, not a lot of
people. I'm telling you, I love it. Listen, for all of those Jewish folk out there, what do Christmas night? You go to the movies, of course. It's one of the biggest movie nights of the year for everybody, quite frankly. I mean, I don't know. I love it. And I enjoy, actually, especially like on New Year's Eve, too. I mean, everyone always wants to be somewhere on New Year's Eve. And wouldn't it be nice to be somewhere where you sort of feel relaxed and at ease and comfortable and not squashed, and, you know, you're singing the kind of music that you really like to sing, and, you know, you're hearing the kind of stuff you really like to hear. And I ain't lying, we drink on stage. You know, we also, we are happy with the spirits. So, and we, for those people that like to partake, we offer freely the opportunity to join us, you know? So
now, Aileen and Laura are now going to be there.
Yep, for sure. You said alcohol.
Trust me. Yeah, exactly. See? And you know what? Bring your kids. And it sounds ridiculous to say that, but we've had people say, well, is this kid-friendly? Sure it is. You know why? Because, again, Jeff and I are probably on the same mental level as your children. So trust me when I tell you, your kids will enjoy some of the BS that we do more than you do. We've got eggnog for them.
Let me interrupt you for a second. Somewhere where you probably wouldn't want to bring your kids is to your concert tonight at the Roundabouts fundraiser at Studio 54 for Assassins. The night, the 2004 cast is reassembling for a benefit concert, and tickets are like, you know, $500 to $2 million or something like something like that, a little bit more than that. With the $2 million, and Kudish gives you a lap dance.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Jay.
You give them a lap dance for $2 million. So
I give them the nastiest lap dance they've ever had.
God, why don't I have $2 million?
Yeah, think about what you're saying. You really want that? Trust me, you don't want my lap dance. No, dude, it's going to be, it's so cool. We were rehearsing yesterday, and, you know, almost every original cast member is in the show. I mean, obviously, you know, the one or two people can't make it. They've got other things going on. It's a thing called life, but almost every original cast member is in the show, and we were rehearsing yesterday, and we were all just sort of, and if there wasn't even sort of a chance to say, hey, hi, how's it going, blah, blah, it was sort of like we were bang in it, you know? And, you know, Paul Giamatti walks in the room. He's like, all right, let's get going. I got to get back to my show. Let's go.
So, you speaking know, of which, I saw The Mystery of Edwin Drood on Friday night, and Neil Patrick Harris was in the audience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Neil was there, right? You know, my wife's in the show, so.
Yep.
So
you got to see two very cool people.
A huge return, Anna Lee Ashford, James Barber, Michael Cerveris, Neil Patrick Harris, Jeffrey Kuhn, Merwin Forward, Ken Krugman, Chris Peluso, Becky Ann Baker, Mario Cantone, Alexander Gemignani, Mark Rich, of course, Dennis O'Hare, Iman Foley, and Ann Nathan and Sally Wilford. You guys must be having a fun time.
Well, yesterday was just diving back in, so it was just like, you know, Neil and I just sort of looked at each other, and I was like, dude, this is kind of strange, isn't it? It's like, and Neil was like, Neil was like, it just feels like we were here, you know? So all of us, I mean, of course, you guys have to understand, as an actor, as a performer, when you originally decide you want to do this thing, and it's kind of a dysfunctional thing that we do, it truly is. You know, to get up on stage, to pretend that you're someone else so that you can actually deal with your own emotions, you know, and the necessity to some degree the absolute necessity to express yourself for whatever the reason is you need to express yourself in front of thousands of people. I mean, let's be honest, that's in some ways that's not indifferent to, you know, a flasher, if you will. You know, it's not good enough to do it alone at home. You got to do it in public, right? So it's just this fascinating thing that we do. And, you know, just to see this group of people and to have had the opportunity that we had in the business to do a piece like this, a piece that we knew had such a specific point of view and had such a specific message and was not going to apologize for it. That's a rare, rare occurrence and experience in the theater, even more so today. And it's probably some of our proudest moments on stage to have shared that experience together and to come, you know, to come back together again and share it for another night and catch up with each other. And this is a group of people that really love and respect each other. I mean, honestly, Assassins, this dark movie piece, was one of the most mellow rehearsal experiences I think any of us ever experienced, because everyone was on the page together, you know? And there we are again in the room, and we're going over another national anthem, and we were all reminded very quickly of how complicated that piece of music actually is. You know, we were all like, oh my God, who sings what, where, what's going on? You know? And so funny, Mario Cantone, wait a minute, what's the timing on this? Because he has to say F it in the show. And he's like, what's the timing? Where's that drop in? And we're all like, it's on account. It's da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, and it just literally hearing him over and over, F it. All right, let me do that again. F it. Oh, damn, I can't pick up on that cue. You know, it's hysterical. But all of us just reminding ourselves what we did, because it was 8 years ago now.
Oh, yeah. So, this afternoon you're in Monmouth doing the Holiday Guys, and then tonight you're at 54 doing Assassins, and you know.
Well, today 3:00 Monmouth. Tonight rehearsal. Tomorrow Monday.
Monday.
Do the concert at the Roundabout. I don't even know if tickets are available anymore. If anyone out there's, I don't know, are you guys going to be airing this soon?
Be tomorrow.
All right. Well, if anyone's listening to this, it's Monday, and I don't know if there are tickets, but don't wait. Actually, call while we're on air and see if there's anything left. Because, I mean, it was hot the minute they announced that they were going to.
It was announced in August, and most of the tickets went right away. I think there's only, according to the Roundabout website, the $5,000 tickets are left. So
then great. Then go for it.
Those are the only ones really left.
Really?
I want to say that $4,700 of the $5,000 tax is tax deductible. So, you know.
Listen, for folks out there that can, you know.
Yeah.
Afford that tax deduction, it's going to be overnight.
What was that, Aileen?
He said, Mitt Romney, are you listening? You can write it all off.
Exactly.
That would be interesting for Mitt Romney
interesting.
to go see a show about assassins. Yeah.
Well, interestingly, I think probably a couple weeks ago, he would have been, that's a terrible show. And he may think differently now. Who knows?
But seriously as well,
I even said this yesterday. I said, yet again, conversation with Neil Patrick Harris. I was like, it's going to be really interesting to see how this show is, you know, that sits today. He's like, yeah, I want to see, you know, whose voices are blown, whose voices are still there. And I was like, no, dude. I was like, no, just in the social climate that we're in, I think we were really fortunate when we did Assassins in 2004. Because, you know, each time before that they tried to move Assassins to Broadway, there was serious stuff going on in the world that put the kibosh on it. Initially, there was the Falkland Wars, and that sort of stopped everything. And then when they wanted to get it going in 2001, 9/11.
Yeah.
And obviously a piece like this, it was inappropriate for those times. And then we went in 2004. Believe me, we were all waiting for the other shoe to fall. When we were in rehearsal, everything, because it had happened so many times, and it hadn't, and it didn't. And, you know, it was 2004, and people were angry and frustrated, and a lot of people felt disenfranchised and not heard, which is, of course, perfect for our show. And it was the right time, and it may be the right time still. It will be interesting to hear it tonight yet again. You know, because no matter the year, the show will always take on a slightly different meaning, you know? That's what's cool about it. It will always have life because it will always have a different life given any time in our history.
So tell us how does your perspective change over the years from, you know, in 1993 when you landed Joseph on Broadway to your experience now, and how have you seen Broadway change since?
I have seen very strongly that we have faded away from the commitment to the story we want to tell. And this is just my opinion. I have seen very strongly a resignment to the bottom line and a lack of commitment with passion to the story at hand. I have seen the external become overblown and the internal be disregarded.
Well, Mark, don't you think it's, I hate to say it, but is it an absolutely inevitable outcome of the, you know, the change in the economics?
I think it's an ebb and flow. It's like a biorhythm, personally, I think that. But I also think what's happened is, it's twofold. I think there's always a biorhythm because I think depending on the social climate, that's the kind of show that you're going to see.
Mm.
I think that, because if you look at the last 4 or 5 years especially, every year the show that's got the greatest applause and or the awards, if you count that as having value, have been the small shows. That said, the shows that have had the longer runs and ultimately built up the rhythm in the audience for the bottom line have been the big shows. We've also had a development away from the old style of producing. Since I've been here, I've seen the individual producer make way to the multiple producer, make way to the corporation, make way to the film company. Mm. I have seen the old school of theatrical mentality make way to the new school, which is largely a Los Angeles-based point of view, you know, the film studio way of doing things. I have also seen in it used to be that it would be Broadway music that would lead the way for popular music in this country. And now popular music is definitely leading the way for the sound on Broadway, which may or may not be a bad thing. I personally actually think it's a good thing, because I'm finding music today is actually simplifying and breaking down to basics again, just in a different form. You know, if you want to look at guys like Mumford and Sons, for instance, this idea of folk rock, country has gone more mainstream. Storytelling has really sort of in music gotten a little simpler. And it's leading the way, not just for Broadway, but for opera as well, actually. So there have been a lot of these changes, and they've all been happening simultaneously. My hope, and you know, that's to some degree, I've been writing a lot. I've been actually staying away from 8 shows a week and focusing on getting on the other side of things, production, writing, directing, because you can talk about these things and you can have opinions about these things and you can complain if you want, or you can do something. You know, it's easy enough for somebody to point a finger and be a critic. It's a whole other thing to actually take it on for yourself and see what that experience is personally. And I believe in telling story, especially through music theater. I think it's a very unique way of telling story. I don't think it's dying by any means. I do think it's definitely transitioning, and I think it's a question of finding out what that transition is. I actually think we're on our way back to another golden age in it. You know, I do. And I think we're on the cusp of it. So it's going to be interesting to see what that is.
All right, Mark. Well, I think that you have a lot of people that agree with you. I don't know, were we talking before the recording or just after about Book of Mormon? Was that before we started recording?
I mentioned it while we were recording.
While we were recording, because yeah. We talked about how, you know, Book of Mormon, when you read it, you know, commercial people, if the boys who wrote it weren't, you know, so well known and have so many credits behind them, would Book of Mormon have been produced?
No, and then also, no. I think what I took from it was Mark's main point is that I'm sure, you know, even though those guys come from TV, I'm sure they didn't sit down and say, what idea can we have that's going to make us millions of dollars on Broadway? And said, oh,
no,
I know,
exactly.
let's write a spoof of the Mormon religion and these guys who go to Uganda and try to, you know, convert them to Mormonism. I'm sure they did it because they wanted to, and they thought it was hilarious, and they thought it was funny, and they could make a point, and they did it. And I was with you, Mark. I thought it was going to be the biggest flop in history.
Here's the thing. But seriously now, because everything that you're saying, everything is valid. You know, it's like, would it have gotten produced without them being who they were in terms of us knowing their kind of stuff? No, there's no way. Not on Broadway. Would it have gotten produced off Broadway? Possibility. Would it have been able to move, even if it was a hit off Broadway, to on Broadway? I seriously doubt it, because everyone would have said it's a fringe show. And this is what I mean, by the way, that the talent nowadays is there are so many limitations that people put on things, and that's due to their own limitations, you know? That's due to the bottom line, that's due to worry, that's due to fear. You know, Book of Mormon is running on Broadway, and there's some scathing things in that show. Scathing things in that show. But it's running if you trust and you move forward. I know a lot of producers that were offered the opportunity to work on that show, and they said, no way. So it kind of doesn't matter. You know, someone had to take that chance. And the great thing about those guys, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, they'd never apologized for what they do, ever. And that's what I mean by That to me is the best form of theater. And those are the best storytellers. You have something to say, say it. Don't apologize for it. Put it out there. Look, as an actor, I don't expect everyone to like what I do. I don't. And beyond that, let me be really, really honest. I kind of don't care if you like what I do or you don't. I don't care if you applaud for me. I don't care if you laugh for me. I don't care if you, you know, think I'm charming or this or that, or I don't. What I do care about is, do you get what I'm saying? Do you get the point? Do you get the point of what the composer and the lyricist want to say? Am I able to translate that personally, organically, to you, the audience, even if you completely disagree with it? Because that's my job. What I care about is having that conversation. I think it's what those guys care about, too. Because, let's be honest, before the potty mouth even begins coming out in Book of Mormon, they're really sincere with those guys. They're really sincere with those characters. It doesn't wink. It doesn't nudge. They really sort of tell an honest story about this great friendship. They do not make fun of the Mormon people. I mean, that's what they do. They go door to door, and they're positive and happy, and they have this thing they want to talk about. And that's why I fell in love immediately. I was like, you know, these guys are doing something I did not expect them to do in a way I didn't expect them to do it. When I finally got to that humor, by that point, I was in love. So I didn't care. You know, like, then it went to that place. And, you know, then we saw the South Park that we kind of know, but we were in it, you know? And that's why I loved it. They did not apologize. They told their story. And that's why audiences love it. There are no stars in the show. They don't need to be stars in the show. You have stars in the show. Great actors telling a great story. The show is the star. That's another problem with the way we do things. All of this stunt casting because you think that you need, you're going to hit a bottom line by doing that. You know, sometimes it works. If the star also happens to be qualified for the job, and sometimes it doesn't. But I always believe, you know, it's like, you know, another great experience I had was when Foster was the understudy for Millie. And then, you know, through however it all happened, she became the star of the show. And that was the story of the show. And she was the person for that job. Obviously. That's the way it should be. That's the way theater should be. Let's just tell really good stories with really good people. And don't worry about the rest of it.
I agree with you. So, Mark, let me let you run on your way. Get out the door so you can get to your performance and your rehearsal. But thank you so much for joining us on a Sunday morning. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, my pleasure.
All righty. We'll speak to you soon. Have a good day.
You got it. Have a
bye-bye.
Good one.
All right. We want to thank Mark for joining us this morning. Michael and Aileen both got a chance to see Drood, two different performances, one with Will Chase and one with Will Chase's understudy. So this might be an interesting contrast. So, Michael, why don't you start us off with Drood?
Yes, I went to see the show on Friday, and initially the press agents asked me to cancel my tickets because Will Chase, who normally plays the role of John Jasper, was out. And let me say right away that, as far as I know, Will rarely, if ever, misses shows. So he, you know, I'm sure he must have been really under the weather vocally or whatever. But I asked them if I could go anyway because I had a friend coming in, and then come back to see the show with Will Chase, which in this case, you know, I mean, I don't normally like to see shows twice in a short period, but if there's one show to see under those circumstances, it's Drood, because as I'm sure most of our listeners know, this show, the second half of the show, changes every night according to whom the audience chooses to be the murderer, and also the two lovers at the end of the show. So I do plan to go back, but in the meantime, let me say I thought it was a wonderful, beautifully well done production. One of the best things I've ever seen at the Roundabout. The sets, were absolutely gorgeous. Ana Luisos and the costumes, William Ivy Long, and the lighting, Brian Nason. One of the best things about seeing a musical at Studio 54, as far as I'm concerned, is that somebody came up with this brilliant idea quite some years ago to put the orchestra in the boxes. In the balcony boxes, it's split up into two. So in the house left balcony box, you have the conductor, in this case, Paul Gemignani, and about half of the orchestra. And then on the other side, on the house right box, you have the remainder of the orchestra. And this does two things. It creates a wonderful stereo effect, even more pronounced than normal, obviously. But also because of the placement in that way, it means that the orchestra does not need to be so heavily amplified. And so the whole show has a much more, any musical that's done there tends to have a much more natural sound than just about any other theater on Broadway where the orchestra is entirely covered and tremendously amplified, and then the singers therefore have to be tremendously amplified as well, and it all kind of winds up sounding like overkill almost always. So there couldn't be a better place and a better circumstances, I think, to see this show, which I may have mentioned this before. It's one of those weird things. This was, for whatever reason, a show that I just did not know at basically at all. I missed the original for some reason. I don't remember why. I don't own the album. I've heard a few cuts. There are a couple of songs that I knew were really fantastic, specifically Moonfall, the beautiful ballad Moonfall, and the song Perfect Strangers. But I really didn't know the score as a whole. I knew the general idea of the story. I didn't know how it played out. I'd never seen it, never read it. And so it was so much fun, again, especially with this kind of a show, to go into it completely cold. And I just can't tell you how much I enjoy this production. The cast is absolutely phenomenal. From Stephanie J. Block in the title role, and Will Chase normally as John Jasper, Greg Edelman, Jim Norton as the sort of the narrator, the MC, and the amazing Cheetah Rivera as the Princess Puffer, Andy Carl, Jesse Mueller, who I think really is becoming one of our greatest musical theater stars. I think she's going to have the most wonderful, brilliant career, and I can't wait to watch it happen. Who else? Betsy Wolf, Nicholas Barish, Peter Benson, Robert Creighton, who doesn't have a whole lot of Broadway credits, but has become an amazing musical comedian. I've known him for years from his work at Paper Mill, and now he's been working more often on Broadway, and really hope to and expect to see much of him again. So absolutely, a really, really brilliant job all around, and a definite shout out to Spencer Plashey, I suppose that's how it's pronounced, who did go on for Will Chase and did a tremendous job. He seemed thoroughly well rehearsed, completely comfortable on stage, not a false moment, always with it, lovely voice. Again, not too many credits. It's his Broadway debut. He was in the Common Pursuit at the Roundabout and the National Tour of Oklahoma as Curly, so that's a major credit. But yes, it's his Broadway debut. I can't recommend Drood more highly. I really hope you all get there, and I expect it to have a wonderful long run because it's absolutely fantastic.
Hey, Lynn, how did you feel about it?
I felt much the same way. I mean, I also had never seen Drood and had not even heard a recording. I understood the sort of the basic structure of the show and how you got to like pick the way that it ended and that there were multiple endings. But I had no experience with it, and I kind of tried really hard to preserve that in the lead up to the show because I wanted to be clueless. I wanted to just experience it, you know, the way that like most people get to experience theater, non-theater writers that are like, hey, this is cool, let's go see it. And I loved it. I had so much fun. The cast kind of wanders about the audience a little bit before the show and comes out and interacts with you so that you're ready when they come out to count votes at the end. And it was super fun, I think, in 2012 to like manually vote by raising your hand and not have some like weird technology solution. And it just was so true to that sort of music hall, English music hall source of the material. And it was a blast. I absolutely loved it. And to speak to Will Chase, I mean, I will actually confess to not being Will Chase's biggest fan. Prior to this, I had seen him in roles that didn't like seem to fit him as well. And this role, he absolutely killed it. It was awesome. I don't want to like give away too much, but I just have never seen him so perfectly cast, so like relishing his role. He was unbelievable. I loved it. And I was mind blown by how much I loved it because I went in a little skeptical and I had so much fun. I loved everything he did. He really dug in and just exploded his big number on the stage. It just was amazing. I loved it.
Fantastic. Well, you know, Will Chase is, were you watching Broadway to see Will do Chris in Saigon?
I did not see that. Laura did, I think, see him as Chris in Saigon.
Because I don't know many people who weren't Will Chase fans after seeing that.
That's, I think, part of my challenge, to be very honest, was that the first time I saw him was as Roger in Rent.
Ah.
And he has such a beautiful voice, and he's so disgustingly handsome. And he's such a massive idol. Like, he's so... what a Broadway star should be. This like handsome, like barrel chested, beautiful singing. And that's not a Roger. Roger is like a drug addicted rock star. Like, it's such a different, and he was very good, but there were moments where he would like open up and out would come this like beautiful soaring belt of a note. And it's like, just, it wasn't, to me, it was such a it was not my vision of Roger. And so I think that maybe kind of spoiled me a little bit on Will Chase. And this, and seeing him in Drood, like, totally, totally sold me. It changed my mind completely. He was absolutely perfect. He was exactly the way I would imagine that role being played.
And that's interesting. I mean, certainly he was a different Roger than most of the others I'd seen. I personally loved it. I understand what you mean. I think you're talking mostly about his style of singing. But I think also, and I've said this for a while, I think he's incredibly versatile. When you look at the breadth of the roles that he's done, from the full Monty to I didn't see him in Aida, but Aida, I guess he's followed Adam Pascal in at least two roles, right? and then just what you thought you maybe had him pegged, then he did Bells Are Ringing at Encores, and I thought, what an odd choice, but he was absolutely fantastic in that. And then this, you know, this is something different again. He's really the real deal.
Well, you know, if that's what it is, then we have to go see it. You know,
I think you really do.
Yeah, absolutely should. Yeah.
And did you guys both vote for the eventual outcome, or did you see a different outcome that you didn't vote for?
Well, it's interesting. I hear through the grapevine that Cheetah is very frequently chosen as the female of the love interests at the end. Oh, and there's another thing. I didn't know. I thought it was only the murderer that the audience voted for. In this case, maybe you two can tell me, James, were the lovers also always voted for at the very end?
You know, I don't recall them voting for them. No.
Yeah, because my friend said that. So I think maybe is it possible that that's new? And then in addition to that, in this production, the cast votes on the identity of Dick Datchery. So there are three votes in a sense, two audience votes and one cast vote. I wasn't aware of that, so that took me by surprise also. But anyway, Cheetah was chosen as the female lover, and she did a wonderful thing where she was in an embrace, and she got to kick her leg up in the air, and the audience just went nuts, you know, to see Cheetah Rivera's fabled, you know, extension in this show, because it's not, The Princess Puffer is not a dance role by any stretch of the imagination. It's an acting role and a singing role and a presence role. But she did, yeah, we got to see the leg, and it was quite something.
Well, that's great. So I have to move on to our next topic, which is Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike at Lincoln Center, which is a new Christopher Durang play that Michael got a chance to see. So, Michael, what'd you think?
Yeah, just briefly, it's hilarious. It's basically a parody slash homage to the plays of Chekhov. Of which Durang apparently is a great fan, of course. But it's a very freewheeling play, and so there were lots of references and allusions to all sorts of other things and people and so I mean, it's not, I suppose, the most cohesive play you've ever seen, but that has always kind of been Durang's style, I think, and that is one of his strengths. The fact that he'll kind of just let his imagination go wherever, anything is fodder for humor and satire, and that's certainly the case here. Another amazing cast: David Hyde Pierce, Christine Nielsen, who's become quite a the three leads, David Hyde Pierce, Christine Nielsen, and Sigourney Weaver, they all three have a history with Durang. Sigourney Weaver's history with him goes back to their days when they were both at Harvard, and so I mean, I think that really adds a lot, you know. Maybe it goes without saying, when there's that kind of simpatico and that kind of history between a writer and the people who the actors in the show. And so on top of those three, we have Shalita Grant in the play, playing actually a character who's called Cassandra. So there again, it shows you the satire is not limited to Chekhov. And then Genevieve Angelson is Nina, and then Spike, who really comes in from another world and just really mixes things up and creates great hilarity. Aside from acting as the sex symbol of the show, is played by Billy Magnuson, who. Again, not a lot of stage experience, but you would think he'd been on stage since he was born. Just so funny, so perfect timing. The audience just ate him up with a spoon. And I am so glad to see this show at the Mitzi Newhouse. I think it's a great, great credit to Lincoln Center that they produced it. And another definite thumbs up, a very, very high recommendation.
Well, that's excellent. You know, do you really need the background in the classics, in the classic plays, to really get the jokes that are going there? Are they inside jokes, or can you really tell?
I'm glad you asked that, because actually a couple of days ago on WNYC, I heard an interview with David Hyde Pierce, Christine Nielsen, and Sigourney Weaver, and they were asked that specific question. And Sigourney said something which I think is very true. I think it was she who said it. You don't have to know Chekhov. You only have to know what people think they know about Chekhov. You just have to need to know the basic idea of all these gloomy Russians sitting around and talking about life and how their lives are meaningless and how they want to escape but they can't, and they're, you know, if all you know is that you're going to have a great time. And as I said, that's only one of the subjects of the satire. So I would not hesitate to go if just because you're not a Chekhov expert.
Do you think that this is a show that's going to play well in the regions?
Well, if it doesn't, it will only be because maybe some people are afraid of what you just said, James. If they think they need to be Chekhov experts, then I suppose they might be afraid. But I think that, you know, hopefully the title indicates that, you know, that you're in for a really hilarious time, and that you don't need to know that. If anyone's seen any of Durang's previous plays along this line, for example, he has one called For Whom the Southern Bell Tolls, which is basically a parody of Tennessee Williams. And again, you really don't need to be very closely conversant with Glass Menagerie or Streetcar or any of the, you just need to know the general idea in order to appreciate it. Yeah, I hope it does well in the regions. And I'm almost sorry that it's I was sorry that it's in the Newhouse and not the Beaumont, because it won't be eligible for Tony Awards. But, you know, why did I say that? I mean, not everything has to be on Broadway. And, and there is a place, there's definitely a place for a great, great play like this off Broadway. And I don't think it needs to move or anything like that. And I'm sure it's going to be very well represented among the theater awards that cover off Broadway.
I almost thought you were going to say there's going to be a place for us, but you didn't say it. So let's move over to the news briefly, and we'll wrap up here with a couple of news items. Miss Firecracker, the Miss Firecracker contest is going to come to Broadway with Amber Tamblyn. Right. Have you seen this movie?
No.
Aileen, no?
Nope, have not.
So there's lots of the Holly Hunter movie. There's lots of talk about this being a surprise entry into the season, and maybe it'll upset the play category. We'll have to see how that's going to happen. Have you guys watched the TV show House, that where Amber Tamblyn was featured on for a couple of episodes? So
no, but I've gotten the chance to speak with her father a few times, the great Russ Tamblyn.
Uh-huh.
I know he's really, I mean, he's obviously very proud of her.
You cannot forget that she was in The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants 1 and 2.
Oh, yes. I totally forgot that because I watched that so many times.
Yeah, you cannot forget that. No, but to be fair, I actually really like Amber Tamblyn. So I'm excited to see her.
Oh, good. So Sam French selected a new executive director, Bruce Lazarus, Broadway producer. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen with the Sam French catalog, see if they will come out of the 1800s and join us in the 21st century. It seems as though I don't know if they've got if it's a reputation, an accurate reputation or not, for being very old school and stodgy, and maybe they will move forward. What do you think?
Well, it's funny you say that, James, because I don't know if you remember, but a few weeks ago I brought up the point that, I mean, in one way, and I would say a very, very, very bad way, they are moving into the 21st century.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, they've developed something called Samphony, Samphony, which is a product that it's basically recorded tracks of shows that can be used not only in rehearsal but in performance, not on Broadway. I mean, that's, we've not gotten to the point where that's happened yet, but in non-professional, you know, like I'm not sure exactly, educational productions, I guess non-union situations, colleges, community theater, and as far as I know, maybe non-union, you know, professional productions. And it just sounds to me like another nail in the coffin of live music, live orchestral music. And I think it's one of the worst things that I've heard in the past 10 years. So I have spoken to a few people about it, and oddly enough, I haven't really found that many people who are as outraged and frightened about it as I am. So I'm going to have to ask around a little further, and I'm trying to see if I can get a composer or two to address it. And as of now, I haven't been successful, but I haven't given up yet. So I'll report back on that.
All right. Next on the list is that we have a few announcements of national tours. Mike Tyson is going out, and okay. Well, that's less of interest to me, as his Chaplin has announced a national tour.
What the what?
Exactly.
How are they financing this with dreams and pixie dust?
But it wasn't announced to begin until, remind me,
14?
Yeah, like a ways away.
2,665.
So, yeah, 525,600 minutes more.
Sometimes, as we all know, there's a feeling that when a tour of a show that is struggling is announced, it's a sort of a face-saving ploy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hurt your Tony nomination eligibility.
Right.
Prospects by
it also, as we talked a few weeks ago, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but sometimes you put out press releases to really help bolster fundraising. So maybe they're out and trying to raise some money and maybe take the Broadway production and launch a tour from that, which would be seemingly less expensive than just to launch a standalone national tour. We'll see what happens there. But more importantly, has everybody gotten their plane tickets to go out to the Meunier Chocolate Factory to see Merrily?
No, but it sounds pretty great.
It sounds like it might be coming to New York.
It literally opened like 2 days after I left London.
Oh, man.
And I was shattered. I was like on a plane back the day that it opened. I could not. Ugh.
Well,
we saw Bodyguard the musical instead.
So it's getting a lot of positive buzz, and I understand there's a lot of New York producers jumping on planes.
Yeah, and of course, you know, people have been talking for years about bringing the show back in one way or another. I know the Roundabout was talking about it for a while, and then I believe that there were great hopes that the Encores production might move, but it was so, in my opinion, so badly misdirected and rewritten by Mr. Lapine that didn't happen. Also, maybe some miscasting in there in a few cases. Wouldn't it be something if this is the one that winds up coming in?
I saw Merrily in London back in 2000. I'm blank on the on the production that I'm totally blank, but it was really, really good, and I was shocked it didn't come to New York. So maybe this one will make it.
The best one I ever saw was the one at the Kennedy Center as part of the Sondheim Festival. Did either of you by any chance get to see that?
I didn't see Merrily. I saw some other productions. I saw the Sweeney and some I think the Follies from that production.
Well, it was really quite great. It was Michael Hayden, who I'm not always such a great fan of, but he was perfect as Frank. And Raul Esparza was Charlie. I'm looking it up now. I think it was it Miriam Shore?
Was it Dunmar in 2000, James?
2000, the Dunmar. Exactly, yes. Exactly. I saw it. It was. I remember we were. I was in London to do Sweeney in 2000, and we begged, borrowed, and stole to try to get in to see this production and get tickets. And we got tickets at like 2 minutes after the curtain was supposed to go up, and for people who didn't show up because the Dunmar is so tiny, and we got to see it, and it was just amazing. Alrighty, so next on the stories is King Kong. So King Kong is supposedly coming in a few years and is eyeing Spider-Man's nest. And
have they seen the grosses from Spider-Man?
Exactly. I wonder how this story could even have legs when, you know, Spider-Man grosses are in the seven figures. So,
and no one seems to point that out either. None of the articles are like, LOL, this is hilarious.
I wonder if the grosses are maybe not as accurate as they could be.
Well, and also maybe my first thought was that, we keep hearing, and who knows if we'll ever know for sure, that despite the incredibly high box office numbers, that it's not necessarily making, it's not
their weakliest for the game.
So what they might be thinking is that it would theoretically be much cheaper to run it, elsewhere, or, you know, on tour or wherever. Once it's established on Broadway, which I would say it is by now, to kind of just phase out that production and use the sets for a major tour. Do you think maybe that's what?
Well, on one of the articles, and, you know, obviously you have to take stuff with a grain of salt, but one of the articles I read about King Kong, you know, the Spider-Man producers were like, look, we have every intention of this show being here for like 4 or 5 more years, easily. So I wonder, you know, are the King Kong people just like firing a shot and just trying to see, you know, are they maybe thinking, okay, well, this is kind of ridiculous because there's a successful show there right now, but maybe that'll get us more attention. I mean,
maybe. Yeah.
Did you guys see that live broadcast of the King Kong thing a few months ago?
No.
It was happening like in the middle of the night or something like that, and I missed it. But I was very interested to see they had this live stream Saturday, October 6th at 10 p.m., and they had this one-time-only live stream about what they were doing with this, and basically a press event. And I missed it, but I'm looking for anybody who has seen it. So if you are a listener who saw this thing, you know, drop us an email or give us a call and let us know what this was, this live stream in October that happened, because I can't imagine what they're planning to do here. I mean, could they be so over the top? So
the pics of the puppet in the article that I looked at, is it even a puppet if it's 700 million feet tall?
It still qualifies.
They look incredible, but it just seems, it's very curious.
You know, in this day of turntables and chandeliers and helicopters, maybe the King Kong is just going to pick up the next leg there. Speaking of which, Michael, last week you sort of made a word gaffe there.
Yeah, I just don't know what happened. I had a momentary moment of extreme confusion. I was what I meant to say was that, and maybe Aileen would like to address this. We were talking about Scandalous, and I said how half jokingly that what I meant to say was that I was joking that Ed Watts is kind of like the helicopter in Miss Saigon, because word had gotten around that he, in Act Two, that he displayed quite a spectacular torso. Because one of the two roles he plays is this actor who winds up starring as Adam in these religious pageants that Amy Semple McPherson puts on, and he's Adam, and he's dressed appropriately. And several people had told me, and I think they were only half joking, that they were going to leave at intermission, but they stayed around because they heard about this and they wanted to see it. So kind of like the the helicopter in Miss Saigon, where, you know, which is even though it absolutely, that scene should happen in Act One, they specifically and pointedly do it as a flashback in Act Two, just in case you're bored out of your mind and you don't want to miss the helicopter because it's so famous. So that's what I meant to say. And also but I did also want to stress, as Peter Felicia pointed out, this is not to imply that Ed Watts is only worth it for his body. He is a great, really wonderful performer with an excellent voice. Who I haven't seen him in too many things, but I also saw him in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. I saw it at Paper Mill. I'm not sure if that's where Peter saw it. And I didn't see him do it, but I know he just had a run as El Gallo in The Fantastics off Broadway. So he's really great. That's what I meant to say. Instead, somehow I mixed my theatrical metaphors, and I said that Ed was like the chandelier in Miss Saigon, which must have sounded very strange. but I was wondering. I was wondering what Aileen thought and if she understands what I meant.
Oh no, I mean I personally understand it either way. I think that you absolutely can confuse the chandelier and the helicopter, even though they're totally not the same, because it's that whole era of crazy shit falling and flying around.
Absolutely. Talking about crazy shit, Scandalous had a Patrick Healy in the Times wrote this article about the producers putting more money into the show and keeping it going. And what do we think? Is it going to be a very cold January, February for Scandalous?
I would think so. The strangest thing about the article for me was that he said, he sort of implied or stated that they were doing this on some belief that for some reason the box office might suddenly turn around. But then, you know, they discussed the grosses for Thanksgiving week. And if it did so badly during that week, what could we possibly expect? They might at this point make sense. It might make sense to them just to keep it open through Christmas, you know, right through and close right after the new year, because theoretically, at least some people, you know, might see it right before Christmas with all so many people in town and unable to get tickets to other things.
Yeah. And Kathy Lee's name is, you know, could right. definitely attract tourists, you know, to the box office around Christmas.
Right. And she, it seems as though that the Today Show is one long commercial for Scandalous in the fourth hour. So,
yeah,
we'll see. So, have you guys seen this video of the Broadway Gangnam Style?
No. How have I missed this?
Well, I saw it briefly, and I meant to come back to it. I closed the tab, and then I couldn't find it again. And I was hoping that you or Michael or somebody else, but it seems as though that Broadway casts are doing Gangnam Style.
First I've heard of it.
And so I wonder if we're going to see it this week at the Gypsy of the Year. You know?
Oh, wow.
That.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Are you guys going to go to Gypsy? Broadway
I'm
cares
planning
at Insight
on it,
States?
Yeah. Yes.
The fundraiser. Is it Monday and Tuesday or?
Correct.
Monday and Tuesday. So if you guys do see it, I want a full report next week about this. And I'm trying, if you guys find this video or any of the listeners find the video, please send it to me because it's hysterical.
Gee, that's funny that you couldn't find it again.
I wonder if it got pulled down or what had happened. But I looked at it briefly and I got tied up with something else. And then, you know, I have 17 different computers and I can't remember where I saw it, and I went back and I can't find it anywhere. So, but it seems like a natural for either for Gypsy of the Year or for Broadway Bears or something like that, for everybody to be doing that. So it'd be hysterical. Now, the last thing that we're going to talk about, unfortunately, we can't really talk about because some of us are under embargo.
I ruin everything.
But, you know, Aileen has seen Les Mis under embargo, the movie Les Mis, that's going to open up Christmas Day. And so, Aileen, if you liked it, I would like you to blink your eyes.
I can see it. I can feel
it. You can tell.
Okay. Well, you know, I want to let everybody out there know that this Les Mis thing is the Les Mis movie is overtaking all my email, all the press releases and everything. It's ridiculous. It's just like unbelievable.
The buzz is amazing.
The buzz is earth shattering. And we are 24 days away from it officially being open, and everybody in and around Broadway is seeing it, has seen it, will see it.
I just saw, I don't know how recently it is, but I finally saw a substantial clip of the opening, I suppose it's the opening duet between Javert and Russell Crowe and Hugh Jackman. And I have to say, it looked really great. And it was the first opportunity, I think, that many of us heard to hear Russell Crowe sing. So I'm with you, James. It just seems like people are saying not since Chicago, and I think even more than Chicago. I think Chicago was a little bit more of a sleeper. I don't think people knew exactly what to expect until right before and then right after it opened. Whereas now, it seems like the buzz has really been building for Les Mis for a while.
Yeah, so it's going to be quite the thing, and we are going to talk about it extensively after it's opened. So we're going to have Aileen and possibly maybe even Laura will come back and visit with us. And
we'll come back and talk about Aaron Tveit for 4 hours. And
the Aaron Tveit show. We'll see if we can possibly get Aaron Tveit to phone in and squeal for us.
How great for him to get that.
Oh my God.
What an amazing gig, you know?
It's Enjolras, too. Like, it's this role. I know it's like Marius is the one that everybody, like, you know, he's kind of the standout of the younger men, but Enjolras, like, motivates so much because he's so passionate about liberty. And it was so awesome to see him on screen, like, with all these other actors who you know as primarily film actors, and then like Aaron and even Sam Barks from the West End too, like just on the screen, huge. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really familiar with Sam, but Aaron, he and Aaron, I suppose, are really the only two people in it who are not major names known to a vast general public,
and they,
through film or recordings or whatever. Great for them.
A lot of the students, almost all of the students actually, and particularly one of the French soldiers is played by Hadley Fraser, and the students are played by all these West End stars, Killian Donnelly and Alistair Brammer and Fra Free. And so it's kind of cool if you know anything about the West End too, you get to see like these theater actors. I think it's gonna like blow fangirls' minds into like smithereens on both sides of the ocean.
All righty. So I think that's only good for theater.
I think so too.
I think it'll drag people back, and introduce a whole bunch of new fans to musical theater and to Broadway and to the West End. And do we know?
We'll see if. I realize every case is different, but maybe it will give new life to some other potential movie musical projects that were on the back burner or whatever, such as Spring Awakening and In the Heights.
Yeah, that's great. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, so let's wrap up here. Anything else you guys want to add that's coming up or past that we want to mention before we go?
I guess we'll be talking about Dead Accounts soon.
Yes. Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes, we're going to try to talk about Dead Accounts next week and see if Michael and Peter have. Michael, were you scheduled to see it yet?
I will have. I'm seeing it this Friday.
Okay, I think.
Oh, I'm also seeing. There's a revised version of Working.
I can't wait.
Yeah, that I want to call people's attention to at 59 East 59th Street. Because that's something you don't, you know, that's pretty rare, and the fact that it's been reworked somewhat, and I believe Stephen Schwartz is directly involved.
Michael, can you tell me something?
Yeah.
What is happening at 59 East 59? Did they get a new executive director or something? Because like in the last 2 years, they've been just skyrocketing with great stuff. Not they've always done great stuff, but it seems to have gone to a new level in the last couple of years.
I'm not sure. I mean, Primary Stages is still in residence there, but they don't do a full. I mean, it's not only them, and the theater is frequently rented out to others. And there's also a separate space. Have you been to the Black Box?
Yeah.
Upstairs? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know, but I have noticed that also.
That's great.
And they also have the East from Edinburgh.
Edinburgh. Yeah.
There. And yes. And it's quite a wonderful facility.
East from Edinburgh is the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, various different productions that can that are being remounted at 59 East 59 in short runs, just to show people what's happening over at Edinburgh, which is a really great little thing to do as well.
Yeah.
So, Aileen, anything exciting coming up for you guys?
Nothing crazy exciting. We saw Dead Accounts last week, so I'll be excited to hear what you guys think about that. And now, like, top on my list, I really do want to go see Working, because I grew up with James Taylor, who has a couple songs in that show, and Jay Johnson, who I think is like going to be the biggest star of big stars, is in this as well.
So that's right.
Working.
That's awesome.
Right. Oh, and Laura, are you Aileen? Excuse me. Are you looking forward to? Do you have a history with Bear? BARE.
I do not have a history with Bear, and I actually would really like to see this production. I love Travis Wall, who's done the choreography. Mm. I'm a big fan of So You Think You Can Dance. So I'm excited to see it for that reason. And this cast is I've heard very good things about this cast. I've only seen one of them perform, or two of them. But I have no history with Bear, and that's another show sort of like Druid where because it's coming in, I've sort of intentionally stayed away from learning a lot more about it. Even though Matt Doyle, who we love, is on the cast recording of that show, I've tried to stay away so that I'm come in and get surprised. So,
speaking of which, I ran into Matt on the street the other night, and I believe it was the day after his first performance as the lead in Book of Mormon, and he said it went really well.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
he's darling.
Yeah.
Hey, Michael, you want to tease next week?
What specifically?
Well, who's coming to see us next week?
Oh, yes. We have a very wonderful performer, someone I've loved for years, Maureen McGovern, will be joining us because she has a show coming up at 54 Below, another Christmas show. And actually, she has one of my favorite all-time Christmas albums, recorded some years ago, but she, you know, she's got one of the greatest voices in history, I think, and some, you know, theater credits as well. So I'm really, really looking forward to speaking to her.
Oh, that's awesome. So, please keep listening to us. I want to remind everybody that you can subscribe to these podcasts by going to the front page of BroadwayRadio.com, and there's a subscribe button right there. That way, each and every time we have a new episode of This Week on Broadway, it'll be automatically downloaded to iTunes for you. You can listen to us in other ways as well. Let me juxtapose there by saying you can listen to us on Broadway World Radio Wednesdays at noon, Thursdays at 7 p.m., and Saturdays at 2 p.m. If you don't want to listen to us on iTunes or Broadway World, you can get in front of your computer at those times. You can listen to us on the Stitcher app, which is available for your iPhone, your BlackBerry, your Android device. That way you listen to us on the fly without downloading us. We are still trying to field listener volunteers to help us out with a few projects, and I'm getting your emails, and I'm very neglecting getting back to you, so I'm going to try to do that this week. So be aware that I will be hounding you if you have offered your services up, and please, if you haven't, please do offer your services up. We have a lot of transcriptions and various different things that we need to do with the podcast to get it out to other people. So our contact information is on BroadwayRadio.com as well for Michael, for me, for Aileen, for Peter as well, and also with all these links to the stories that we talked about today and various things, links back to Mark Kudish's website and the Holiday Guys and the itinerary for shows and the Assassin stuff and all that stuff. So if you've missed anything, go to BroadwayRadio.com. You can find it there. So on behalf of Aileen McKenna and Michael Portantier, this is James Marino saying thanks so much for listening to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Listen to what I say. The child, sleeping in the night. He will bring us goodness and light. He will bring us goodness. The child, sleeping in the night. He will bring